This is a podcast about the hardcore community.
Made by and for those who live authentic lives and embrace hard truths.
We archive the stories of the bands and people who make this lifestyle possible. I'm Josh Lyon.
And I'm Greg Benoit.
And this is the Hardcore Archive Podcast.
A kind of newer band. I think they've been around for about a year. So we're going to be talking about their activity and whatnot. So that should be a lot of fun. We're going to be talking with Zion's Blood today, though. So I don't know if you want to introduce those guys, Greg.
Yeah, so we've got Zion's Blood here. They're based out of Connecticut, but they have members in other parts of the country as well. We've got Carl, Alex, Isaiah, and Ryan. Why don't you guys just do a quick round of the table and introduce yourselves and maybe what instrument you play in Zion's Blood?
Sure, Ryan, go first.
All right, well, my name's Ryan. I'm from Long Island, but living here in Connecticut right now. I play drums in the band, and yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Who wants to go next?
I'm Isaiah. I'm the bassist in the band from Rochester, New York, but down in Connecticut.
I'm Alex. I'm one of the guitar players, and I'm from Jersey and in Connecticut at the moment.
My name's Carl, from Connecticut, born and raised. I do all the rhythm work, and I sing or do the vocals for Zion's Blood. But thanks for having us on the show.
Oh, thanks for joining us, guys. So we'll jump right in. I'm always curious to find out how folks first discovered hardcore and what draw you to it. So why don't we start with you, Isaiah? I've got some additional follow-up questions from you being from Rochester, which is where the podcast is based out of. So give me a rundown about how you found hardcore.
Sure. I mean, when I was a kid, I had my Green Day phase and phase of Metallica, but it wasn't really until I got the bands like Fugazi and, you know, Rites of Spring and stuff like that. All the stuff we do now.
So sorry, you cut out a couple times there. So you got started kind of with alternative or extreme music with like Metallica and Green Day, and then in college you discovered Fugazi. So are you going to college out in Connecticut now?
Yeah, we all go to college down at the University of New Haven. We're all music students, mostly music and sound recording. But we're all in the music thing. So we just kind of share music with one another. A lot of the time we just sit and listen to music and talk about it.
So you grew up in Rochester. Is that where you were born?
I was actually born in Jersey. I was in Jersey, New Jersey. And I lived in New York for like a year. And then I moved up to Rochester. That's where my family is originally from, my mother's side. And I've pretty much been there ever since.
So, like, where did you go to high school and stuff?
High school, I went to school. I'm from Brighton, which is a town. Well, you know Brighton.
Yeah.
In Rochester. So I went to Brighton High School in the Central School District there. And since then, I've just kind of been back and forth between home in Connecticut for school.
Awesome. Yeah, I noticed you rocking a House of Guitars shirt in one of your pictures on Instagram, which, everyone who's from Rochester that listens will know exactly what that is. And I expect probably a lot of people outside of Rochester are familiar with the Hog, since that's such an institution. You ever like get into any going to hardcore shows when you're in Rochester? Or is that something you got more into when you moved out to college?
It's something I got more into when I moved out to college. And that just goes for like shows in general. Like growing up, I wasn't really into the scene and stuff. I honestly grew up playing classical violin. And so I was more into like the classical stuff, going to, I don't know why I'm thinking, but like the school of music and stuff. My teacher in high school, my orchestra teacher teaches at Buffalo. So I was, going around to colleges and stuff and seeing all that type of stuff. But,
oh, wild. Well, when you're out on breaks or something, come out. We'd love to meet you in person and shoot the breeze, catch up. This funny connection there.
For sure.
Carl, I'm like interested to hear about what got you into hardcore. What bands have like influenced your lyrics. For me, one of the most important things about hardcore and what sets hardcore apart from like metal and even punk to some degree is kind of the lyrical content and the willingness to take on, you know, heavy personal, political, and social topics. So let's hear about how you got into hardcore and maybe a little bit about what Zion's Blood's lyrics are all about.
I'm glad you brought up lyrics because that was like the main thing that brought me to hardcore in the first place. I mean, my father, when I was a kid, like my dad was into like hair metal and like 80s hard rock and that whole thing. So that kind of got me on like the rock music thing. But then as I got into middle school, I got into Slayer and Megadeth and like all the big four stuff. So I was like, yeah, these guys are really energetic and, you know, it's heavy and it's fast. So that was everything like a really energetic middle school kid needed to hear. I was like, this is great. I was into like Dio and Iron Maiden and all that kind of shit. But as I got older, my Iron Maiden and my Dio records, as great as they are, they weren't really doing it for me because I couldn't click with anything they were saying. Really, like I didn't feel like it was speaking to me. I liked the energy of it. I liked that it was fast. I liked that it was loud. But on a personal level, it wasn't speaking to me. So that was when friend of friends were like, hey, you should check out this band. You should check out Minor Threat. You'll probably like Minor Threat. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, wow, it's energetic. It's fast. But what Ian's saying makes total sense to me. And finally, someone on a record is saying what I've been thinking up here for like the last 2-3 years. So one thing led to the next. It was, you know, I too was listening to like, I had my Green Day records and my Offspring records. I had those as well. But I quickly went from like, you know, Minor Threat to the Germs and Black Flag and really a lot of those West Coast bands like Descendants, Adolescence. I really got into hardcore via the West Coast stuff, which is funny because I mean, we're definitely more inspired and listen to regularly the stuff from the East Coast where we're at now. But my background in intro to hardcore comes from a lot of the West Coast kind of stuff, you know. But terms, I mean, you're talking about lyrics. I kind of just try to write about, you know, it's cheesy to say, but music and especially lyric writing is total therapy for me. It always has been, no matter who I'm writing for or what I'm writing for. I'm writing lyrics for me first because it makes me feel better to get stuff out there in an artistic way. And it feels good. So it's whatever's on my head that, you know, I kind of got to hash out for myself. That's what I do. And if people listen to it and they get something out of it, I think that's great. You know, but that's really all it is.
Yeah. So Descendants are like a huge band for me and one of the like first legit punk bands I got into. Black Flag as well. Like I was into like more mainstream punk, like Green Day, Offspring. And then I came across like a copy of Get in the Van by Henry Rollins.
So good.
Yeah.
And so good.
It I think it holds up really well. I mean, obviously, you know, if they had had iPhones back in the day, a lot of his adventure stories probably wouldn't have, you know, happened, you know, because they, you know, have ability to communicate and get directions to venues and stuff. But for me, Black Flag and Descendants were like first legit bands that I was into. So I love that that's something that's been an influence in your life.
Absolutely. Well, they're two bands that they were like two wicked early bands. I mean, Black Flag being really like one of the first that showed, hey, if you want to do this and you want to make music and go out and fucking do it, no matter what cost or whatever, they did it at the most extreme levels. Like you go read Get in the Van. I mean, they went through hell, those guys, to make their shit work. But they did, you know, so it serves as inspiration in that aspect. I mean, we all love Rollins and all the stuff he's been involved with for sure. He's kind of an inspiration, like figurehead dude. But yeah, same thing with Descendants too. I mean, total road dogs, slugging it out for years. But you know, they're the best. Some gold standard stuff right there.
Awesome. So Alex, I want to shift over to you and just talk a little bit about guitar and what kind of influences have you know, been present in your life to influence Zion's Blood sound.
Okay. Well, I started out as a metal kid. I'm still a metal kid. That's what got me into guitar and stuff like that. So my formative years, like when I was in middle school and high school, I was spending a lot of time, you know, learning like metal and stuff like that, playing that kind of stuff and different styles of music. And then later on, I wound up getting way more into hardcore, but really it's just anything that I think sounds cool influences me for this band. Anything like metal or hardcore stuff, mostly like East Coast stuff from like the late 80s and 90s. That's what I really like that influences me for this band, and some alternative stuff and a lot of modern stuff too. Like, are you talking about like bands or just things in general?
Oh, geez, let's do both.
Okay. Well, Bands, that's tough because I can get inspiration from, like, I don't know, say like Crown of Thorns, for instance. They influence a lot of like the riffs and stuff. Same thing with like Leeway. But then, you know, I'm really into like metal bands, like Candiria, stuff like that. That kind of seeps in there. I take a lot of, like, if you're going to like technical, like music theory terms and stuff, try to spice up the way we sound a little bit by using like certain chords taken from like higher triads and stuff on the neck and stuff, and making them, bring them to like the lower strings to make them sound a bit heavier and just a bit more of like a harmonic complexity, just stuff that sounds catchy too. But really influences, it's everywhere. I, you know, anything from like Leeway and Crown of Thorns, like I said, to like Drug Church, like Quicksand and stuff like that. So it's like everywhere.
And even beyond, I hate to jump in, but even beyond that, like, there'll be times where Alex and I will be sitting around and we'll be listening to, we'll throw on like a Crown of Thorns or a Crumbsuckers record, and then we'll listen to like The Sundays or The Cure or something like that after. So like, it legit, like he's saying, it really does come from anywhere and everywhere, where we're like, hey, that's cool melody, that's cool drum beat, like the production on this, you know, it's legit everything. It's rooted in hardcore and heavy stuff, but it's kind of all around, you know?
Yeah, you guys do a good job of like having a foundation of like maybe more traditional New York hardcore style, with, you know, influences like maybe Sick of It All or Leeway, but then you've got like kind of a veneer of like metal over it that really works well. Doesn't like go too far off into the metal chord direction. Like, it's still solidly hardcore, but it's not just straight up power chords. It's, you know, there's like leads and harmonies over it. So that's like definitely my favorite kind of hardcore. Like, my favorite is probably like bands that have more hardcore style drumming with like metal guitars and then, you know, hardcore lyrics and hardcore rhythm. So speaking of drumming, I want to switch over to Ryan and ask you a little bit about some of your influences. I always like want to give the drummers some love because I play the drums, and that's usually the one that people forget about the most. Like, no one ever takes pictures of the drummer, I think is the name of, I forget what band, but they had a song, a hardcore band had a song, no one ever takes pictures of the drummer, and it's definitely true. And then when they do, I'm like making some fucked up looking face, like I'm constipated or like passing a kidney stone or something. It never looks cool. Ryan, tell me a little bit just like about your setup, like what kind of setup you got, like, you know, 4-piece, 5-piece, double bass, and then maybe some of your influences as a drummer musically.
Yeah, for sure. First of all, you guys can still hear me, right? I have my AirPods die. I just want to make sure everything's good.
You sounded good.
Perfect. All right. So setup wise, I'm just kind of rocking a basic 4-piece kit, rack tom, 4-tom snare, single kick with a double pedal. Cymbals, just kind of like your basic 2-crash, ride, hi-hat, China. Nothing overly crazy, but I have the set I have is a Gretsch. It's a 7-piece. So I have multiple different toms. So if I ever want to like tack on like a little 8-inch tom or a like 2 4-toms, if I ever wanted to go crazy Neil Peart-esque like that, then I could, but I'd probably get shot if I did that. So
do you play like any other styles of music? Like, being a music student, do you ever get like pulled in to do like a jazz gig or something?
Oh yeah, no, I love trying to kind of going off of like influence. I'll try it like mainly right now, like I'm a metal guy. I pull from a lot of metal stuff. That's kind of what I've listened to. But like, I play in jazz band here. I play funk when I can, like R&B, that type of stuff. So like, I'll try and pull from a lot of different genres. So just kind of like what we were talking about earlier with the it literally comes from everywhere. I try to do that to the best of my can, best of my ability.
Awesome. Well, I love that you guys like are all into music theory and stuff, because you know, every once in a while here in Rochester, we'd have someone come through who was like at the Eastman School of Music, or, you know, just in general, like a huge nerd about music theory. And you can always kind of pick out those bands because they're doing like, they'll have a solid foundation of hardcore, but then they're doing something on top of that that just sets it apart a little bit. And you can definitely hear that in Zion's Blood sound. So kind of speaking to that, I guess I'll just throw it to all of you. Like, what other bands do you guys sound like for people who haven't heard your band yet? And then overall, like, what are kind of like the top 3 maybe influences in your sound?
Wow.
Sound like. I guess to say, well.
I mean, I feel like we have to say Leeway because, like,
yeah, oh, yeah. It's the biggest thing band and influence on us by a long shot. Everybody has different influences, I feel like, but like I said, Leeway, Crown of Thorns, those are two big ones. That yeah, there's a
those
lot.
Are three good, those are good ones. I mean, at least I'll jump in here. The one thing that I love about the Crumbsuckers is how percussive the vocals are. Like, I love, like, when you're listening to a Crumbsuckers record, you feel like you're legit getting assaulted by the vocals. They're like, you know, they feel like drums, the way he delivers his lyrics. But at the same time, like, we love Leeway because of how melodic that stuff is. I mean, Eddie's like the master of doing melodies and actually singing over hardcore tracks. So at least what I try to bring to the table is definitely like a melding of those two things. And then me and Alex love Crown of Thorns. So we try to do a lot of guitar stuff like Mike DeJohn does because he's kind of the man. So hey, those are probably three good ones if you had to go like three hardcore bands. But again, like we're saying, there's so much other stuff that gets baked into that to make it work that you probably don't hear in the music like at all.
Yeah, like my favorite band is Rush.
And yeah. And I love The Cure, but I don't think we sound like The Cure at all.
There's some stuff that has yet to come out yet that kind of encompasses more of our influence. Like we said earlier, we have some more melodic stuff in there. Like I'm a really big fan of the band Drug Church. That gets worked into a lot of the stuff that we've been working on and stuff. It's different for everybody. Like I like a lot of more metal stuff. Like I like everything from like for this band, like Drug Church to like Slayer, Division of Disorder, that all goes into it. It's just a lot of different, like we said, a lot of different stuff.
So I don't want to step all over your questions, Josh, but you mentioned Leeway a bunch, and you guys did a cover benefit for Eddie Leeway. Can you tell folks maybe a little bit about that process and where people can find that song and maybe how they can help with that?
100%.
I kind of have that idea in the shower, funny thing.
Yeah, you can tell that story. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, because so we were getting ready to – we got lucky and we're fortunate to be able to record – the next release down in Nashville at Blackbird Studio. So as we were kind of getting prepped for that, we were like, we should probably do like, we were like, let's just like do a warm up kind of thing, get used to everything. Cause we were doing it. We're tracking everything all live, which was the first time we'd ever done something like that before. So we were like, let's do a warm up. Let's do just something that so we can have, get used to the atmosphere, all that. So we're like, We had been talking about doing Who's to Blame for a while, just like to play out, right?
A little bit, because
we played it out once, haven't we?
No, a little bit at our first few shows. We had done like we did Rise and Fall. We had played Rise and Fall, and we were lucky enough to we got Eddie that video. We just reached out to him like, hey, you know, we're huge fans. You're influencing a bunch of kids to do this decades after this record came out, Born to Expire. So we just sent it to him as like, hey, hope you like it. And he got back to us and he was like, hey, he's like, this is awesome. I really appreciate it. That kind of thing. So that kind of blew our minds a little bit because we love his band. But yeah, that was the first thing. And then we kind of started talking about, you know, maybe we should bring Who's to Blame in because we love that song too. But you can go on from there.
Yeah. So then we kind of figured that out and then we were like, so let's just do that as our warm up and then we'll go from there. And then just one random day, I was sitting in the shower having random shower thoughts. I was like, you know what would be awesome is if we can help the dude kind of give back for all the influence, all the music he's given us. Especially because like cancer has affected my family a lot. So cancer means that like cancer research, all that stuff means a lot to me. My mom's a cancer nurse, all that stuff. So however we can help with that cause I wanted to do. So I brought it up to these guys and they were like, let's do it.
Yeah. So we reached out. So we recorded the track. We got it all mixed and ready. We reached out to Eddie about it. We were like, hey, you've given us so much in the form of artistic inspiration. We want to help you out. Let us know if you're into it. And he was. So basically what we've done is if you go to our Bandcamp, which hopefully we can have linked somewhere in the details of this episode. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, great. So if you go to our Bandcamp, you can find the cover of Who's to Blame. It's only there because we're really trying to collect donations and help Eddie out for everything he's given the scene over the years. So yeah, if you go there, it's the most recent release on Bandcamp. You can donate as little or as much as you want. Strongly encouraged. And any donations or purchases of that single we receive, we send straight to Eddie. But it's been an absolute honor and privilege to be able to work with him on this, because, like we've said, the music he's been involved with has been so instrumental in making what we do happen. Like, we wouldn't be the same band if we didn't have those records.
And gets to know him a little bit in the process, too. We've gotten the over text a little bit.
He's been really gracious. He's been really gracious with his time and just, you know, kind of nurturing a bunch of young guys trying to do this stuff. You know, he's been great towards us. So nothing but love and respect over there.
This is something that kind of sparks a lot of thoughts for me. Like, one of the things I love about hardcore is you actually like have a chance of getting to like meet or interact with some of the people who are like your heroes or idols in the scene. I know there's been like some cool stuff that's happened to me through this podcast and running the associated Instagram, where, you know, I've had an occasion to talk to people from some bands that I've liked, you know, like Ray Capo and Porcelli from Youth of Today, and
also
people from like Trial and Bane, which are two bands that were very influential to me.
Yeah.
The other thing that I love about this benefit that you guys did is you guys are kind of toward like the younger end of the spectrum of the scene, and it's connecting with, you know, some folks who are towards maybe the more seasoned end of the spectrum of the scene. And I really like that. Josh and I've been going to shows for a while and listen to hardcore for a while, you know, a couple decades or so. And it's nice, you know, if you stick with the music and participate in the community, make friends with people in the scene, you can kind of grow up together as teenagers, but then you can also grow older together. And it's really nice to see people support each other when there's like a health crisis. I know, like, recently there's been like, you know, Eddie Leeway, you know, Roger Merritt from Agnostic Front, you know, Stu from Bane. There've been a lot of big fundraisers and benefit shows and people making shirts and merch and recording covers to help offset medical costs. And, you know, that kind of communal approach is just so important to hardcore, because that's what makes this community and scene different from, you know, metal or any other kind of music.
100%.
But also, you know, folks don't always have the best health insurance when you're like a touring musician and you give your life to this scene. And so I think it's kind of incumbent upon us, the fans of the music, to help chip in, you know, when someone does have like a life-changing crisis. And you see it all the time. I guess it's probably more common now because some of the folks that started this are getting to be in their like 50s and even 60s now, but it can even happen to young people. I mean, I think you guys have probably seen all the stuff on Instagram about like Year of the Knife and the accident that they had, and
horrible.
Yeah, but it's nice that you know, people have each other's back, and that there's like strangers all over the world who will kind of spring into action to help out.
Well, the other thing I wanted to hit on that you just said, you were talking about, none of us were alive when the Desperate Measures record came out, so that's comparatively for our generation an old record. But the thing is there's so many young bands coming out around our age that, whether they know it or not, they're influenced by that record. Some might not know and some do know, and they're not coming out and saying that. So, you know, I felt that we kind of owed it starting out to, you know, pay respects to where we were getting stuff from. That's super important to me, to give bands that paved the way their due.
That's how we started. The first thing we released was a Max cover.
That's right. So it all goes back to that. It was just like, you know, we're doing this, we're going to do it our own way, but at the same time, we still want to pay respects to everyone that came before and made it possible for people like us to just pick up stuff and do this, because there was a lot of barriers that had to be broken and a lot of bullshit that had to be dealt with to make hardcore a viable thing, you know? So you got to pay your respects. You have to. That's how I feel.
So Josh, let you jump in. I've been yapping a lot here. I'll let you get to some of your questions.
Well, I'm going to actually touch on what Carl just said, because I'm actually glad that he did, because we've been talking on this podcast a lot for the last few months about, obviously, hardcore has extremely exploded in the last couple years. Yeah. And one thing that I've talked a lot on here about is wondering, like, where a lot of new kids probably came in through Turnstile and Knock Loose, and that's cool. You see a lot of bands like chasing popularity now, I think. And one thing I was saying on here a bunch was that I hope that, you know, what we came up on hardcore with, like when Greg and I were coming up, isn't lost in translation in this era. And I was hoping that bands would realize where they came from and not forget where hardcore came from. And Carl just explicitly said exactly what I've been hoping, like, this generation. I know you guys aren't probably as young as some people we're talking about, but you're definitely, like, probably closer to that age range. And you definitely said and delivered exactly what I hope that people from that age would say. So, because seeing a lot of younger bands, I do wonder a lot, like, if bands, like you're saying, do realize, like, where this all came from. And, like, I like Turnstile, and I've seen Knock Loose before. Like, I have nothing against those bands, but I just want to make sure that people realize that, like, hardcore has been around and is going to be around, you know what I mean? And it started from, like, what you're talking about.
100%. Well, even to touch on a band like Turnstile real quick, like, Alex is a fucking massive Turnstile fan, and I like a lot of those early records too. Turnstile, though, like, you go and you watch some of their videos and stuff, and they've covered old hardcore songs. They're wearing Leeway t-shirts and videos and stuff like that. So they've done their part to try to let the younger people younger than them know where their stuff came from. I think they've done a really good job at trying to, you know, kind of key people in, you know, where they've taken influence and gotten stuff from. You know, then again, though, like, I can't name anything specific, but, like, you'll see bands and they come out, and it's so obvious that what they're doing has come from something like 25, 30 years ago, but yet they're kind of walking in like it's their own thing and all that. And it just rubs me the wrong way. Like, it's fucking weird. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't get that mindset at all. So when we were starting doing our thing, we kind of collectively found it important to, you know, let people know, you know, hey, this isn't, you know, it's a communal thing. It's just, you're passing the bucket generation to generation. But a band like Turnstile has done a great job of letting people know, you know, where they got their stuff from and what they're doing, I think.
One thing that came up last year with a mutual friend of Greg and mine, when we were talking about our favorite releases last year, we were talking about Mind Force, and
he
was like, that guy sounds like the guy from Turnstile. And I was like, they both sound like Eddie Leeway. You know what I mean? Like, how are people missing this? Like, that's what I was worried about. Like, is this generation missing stuff like that? And it's good to see that it's not lost in translation. So, you guys touched on the fact that you already dropped your first single was the Cro-Mags cover. You put a Smiths cover on your demo, and you dropped the Leeway cover. Is Schitt's Creek or Juggernaut going to be next for a cover, or you guys have other plans for cover songs? Or
I don't really
not explicitly in the moment, because, like, we're really trying to focus right now on getting our original stuff out. We have a whole boatload of stuff recorded and just waiting to be mix we're kind of sitting on until we can get some more exposure, play some more shows, stuff like that. But I'm sorry, Carl.
I'll make it quick. The main thing we're focused on right now is trying to get out and play shows at this point, because, like Ryan just said, we're sitting on recordings right now that we're going to put out all original material. But what we really want to do before that is just get out and show people that, hey, we can play, this is what we're doing, so that once we have more stuff out, we can have more people hear it. But I don't really, aside from, like, a fun cover at a gig here and there, obviously promoting the Who's to Blame cover, because that's important. Aside from that, there's not really, like, plans to do more covers and stuff like that. We're ready to just, like we said, get going and contribute our own thing to this scene and do what we do. That's where we're at, I feel.
Since you mentioned some of the shows and getting shows, tell me about some of the shows you've played so far, just some notable ones. What's the energy like at those?
Alex, you want to take this one?
Yeah, I would say we played last week at a small spot in Connecticut called The Cellar. We sounded really good and stuff. Feel like every time we play, we get tighter and tighter, more people come out. More people notice us and stuff, so that's always really good. I feel like once we go to a specific location, like we played Long Island over this summer and people liked us, so you know, when the next time we go back there, more people will come and stuff like that. We got our name out there, so we're just slowly getting our name out there. We want to try to get to different states and stuff like that, around where we live and stuff, getting out to those places and stuff, like Jersey, New York. So,
and shout out real quick to Hard Knock Records in Long Island for putting that show together. They treated us very well. They were a good group of guys. But yeah, we did that. We played in Nashville, which was interesting. That was like one of the first shows where we had, where we really played like a lot of the newer material that we had been working on. And yeah, that was just very interesting vibe for that show. But we had a good time with it. And we played there, trying to play more around Connecticut, because that's where we're at right now. But playing on Long Island was cool. We hope to be back there soon. But it's kind of like every show we play, like Alex was saying, we'll finish the set. We'll be like, that was the best one. And then we'll do the next one. It's like, that was the best one, which is a good feeling. I don't think, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I don't think there's been a set yet where we play, we finish, we're like, ooh, that didn't measure up to the last one. Like, I feel like it's definitely progressing and getting better and better, which is good. That feels good.
So I see you guys have a show coming up in Connecticut in October. Do you want to just promote that real quick?
Yeah, we're playing at Cherry Street Station in Wallingford, Connecticut on October 21st. It's a huge bill. There's a lot of great bands going on down there. People
coming out. Shout out Deadlock for putting it together. Joaquin, yep. If you're in the Connecticut area, Joaquin is kind of the guy right now. Connecticut's in a weird spot right now, but we're charging through it. Joaquin's kind of being in the forefront, I'd say, right now, putting shows together, and nothing but love to him.
100%. Because, yeah, we've had a lot of venues close over the last few months in Connecticut, and everyone's been kind of like, what the fuck is going to happen? Where are we going to go? And like Ryan just said, Joaquin's really stepped up and got and started getting venues to get hip to the hardcore bands and putting things together. So all love to him. He put the show together that we're doing on the 21st. We're on first, so get there early if you're in the area. But yeah, October 21st, Cherry Street Station. More info is over on our Instagram and the Deadlocked Productions Instagram as well.
Well, we'll see what we can do about getting you guys a show in Rochester sometime, now that I know you guys have that like built-in connection and maybe like a living room floor to crash on after the show.
Let us know.
Yeah.
So is there anything we missed that you guys want to touch upon before we wrap things up?
We'll go around the room. Isaiah, you got anything?
I don't really got anything off the top of my head.
Alex?
I'm thinking of something real quick. Go to Ryan.
What are you thinking of? I mean, I can't really think of anything at the moment.
You guys want to give like shout outs, and you already plugged the show, because we usually do like plugs here too, and plug the demo, obviously. We'll post the links, and then if you guys want to send us a track to play with it after the interview too, awesome. I'll usually play a song from bands on there. But yeah, if you guys want to give like shout outs and any other plugs too, that's cool too.
Sure. Well, we sent over the track earlier, so at the end of the episode, if you're listening, you'll hear Cut the Middle, which is the third track from our demo, which is all over. That's everywhere. Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, all that kind of thing. The only other shout out I guess I would give right now is in terms of keeping hardcore alive and vibrant in Connecticut, shout out to Static Era Records, that whole team, Jay Reason, all those guys. They're storefront out here in Connecticut, in Milford. And basically, like, that's kind of where, if you want to know what's going on in hardcore right now and bands coming in and all this and that, you can go in there, have a conversation, learn a lot of stuff, get cool records. But he's been instrumental in just, you know, promoting positive vibes and doing that whole thing around here. Also, RIP to the Wham Leg, Wallingford American Legion. That was like the venue that just closed. I was at one of those last shows there and it was great. So RIP, shout out to that crew there. But
also, if you're a band needing photos in the Connecticut area, shout out to Jess Finn, good friend of ours, been taking photos with us, been doing a phenomenal job. We just got a batch the other day, looking fire as always. So, 100%. So if anyone needs photos, hit her up.
Stuff's all on our Instagram and go look at our photos. We've tagged her all over stuff. But yeah, if you need kick-ass photos, go to her. She's the best. Alex, have you thought of what you wanted to say?
I got nothing. I'm all good.
All right, Alex, then I guess we'll wrap it up with you. Thank you, guys. Everybody be sure to check out their song after the credits. It's Cut the Middle from from the demo, or is it from an EP?
Self-titled demo, EP, whatever you want to call it.
All right, so Cut the Middle after the credits, and check them out on Instagram. These guys are really talented. Fresh up and coming, so get in on the ground floor before they blow up. Thank you guys for joining us.
Hey, peace and love to you guys. More to come soon from us, so stay tuned. But thank y'all.
Was it from the demo or is it from a EP?
Self-titled demo, EP, whatever you want to call it.
All right, so Cut the Middle after the credits and check them out on Instagram. These guys are really talented, fresh up and coming, so get in on the ground floor before they blow up. Thank you guys for joining us.
Hey, peace and love to you guys. More to come soon from us, so stay tuned. But thank y'all.
The Hardcore Archive podcast is Josh Lyons and Greg Benoit with creative support from Rob Antonucci.
This podcast is a product of the Rochester Hardcore community. Theme song provided by Stand Fast.
Visit Hardcore Archive Podcast on Linktree to listen to past episodes.
Follow Hardcore Archive Podcast and Enterprise Hardcore Podcast on Instagram for updates.
If you have an idea for an episode or would like to have your band's music featured during the closing credits, please contact us at hardcorearchivepodcast@gmail.com.